back in 1980, I mean, centuries ago, 1980.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, Dr. Jesse Green here, host of the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Today it's an absolute pleasure and a privilege to be having a conversation with Dr. David Phelps from freedomfounders.com. David and I have known about each other online for a couple of years now, but we came across one another at an event in Sydney a few months ago, and we sat down and had a conversation, and it was a really nice conversation, I have to say. And from that conversation, we thought it'd be a good idea to get David onto the podcast and share a bit about his story. What you'll find, as I did when I met David, is not only is he very astute and savvy as a business person and as an entrepreneur, he's a really nice guy. He's got a big heart for dentistry. He's got a big heart in general, but a particularly big heart for dentistry. And what I love about David is that he shares so openly and so freely about his journey along the way. He shares what's worked well, what hasn't worked so well, some of the things he might do differently. And in this conversation, it's really wide-ranging, and we start off with, you know, I suppose David's very compelling reason why he wanted to build a practice that was profitable and then scalable and ultimately sellable. And those three words should ring very true to Savvy Dentist listeners, because those are the three things that we speak about all the time here: profitability, scalability, and sellability. And what David shares in this conversation is some of the things he learned along each of those steps in the journey and how he's been able to create a lifestyle for himself and for his family that gives him not just the financial freedom, but the time freedom for him to be with his family when they need him most. So as always, in this conversation, there's so much gold that David shares, and he shares so freely, so generously, that I'm going to encourage everyone to make sure you go back and listen to this interview a couple of times. It's just literally dripping with so much valuable information that I know is going to make a big impact in your practice if you take action on it and apply it. So as always, do have a pen and paper handy and take good notes, and we'll see how you can take that into your practice on Monday morning. So without any further ado, here's David Phelps, wonderful guy, wonderful businessman, and someone I'm now proud to call a good friend. David Phelps, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for making the time all the way from Texas in America. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jesse, it is wonderful to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're really welcome. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while, because we met, obviously, when you visited Australia a few months ago, and I've been really keen to kind of pick up some of the threads of conversation that we started at that meeting, and hopefully now we've got the record button on, so everyone gets to listen into that, so it should be a lot of fun.
I'm all for it. I'm game, so shoot away, and we'll have a fun conversation today, you bet.
Sounds great. Hey, listen, mate, you run freedomfounders.com, and I know with your background as a dentist, you're in the similar sort of space that I'm in as well. But I'm really curious, before we kind of get into what you do with your customers and clients in the US, what led you to that place? What was it that kind of took you on the journey from practice ownership into business mentoring, and how did you get there? What's kind of led you to that point thus far?
Yeah, great question, Jesse. It was a kick in the pants. It was a kick out the door. And I'm being a little facetious, but it really had to do with my daughter, my only child, who is 24 years old now, but going back about 12 years when she was about 12 years old, 12 thereabouts, she'd already gone through considerable health challenges in her life. She's a cancer survivor of early childhood leukemia. She had epileptic seizures for about 4 years between ages 8 and 12. And then at 12, the crowning jewel was that she was in end-stage liver failure.
Oh, wow.
Because of all the chemo and the drugs just took, was too much for her liver. And she underwent a liver transplant. Wasn't easy. I don't mean just the surgical procedure. The recovery was like anything, it seemed like in her life, was nothing went exactly according to schedule or menu, right? It always some kind of complications. And it was during that time that she was recovering, because I would leave my practice for chunks of time. She was in Houston, Texas. I'm in Dallas, Texas. So for those that are listening abroad, travel time, that's about four and a half hours in the car, or, a flight away. So it wasn't real convenient to me, but I, certainly took the time out of the practice. And it's during those times in the hospital while she was there recovering that I really got to thinking about you know, what I was doing and how I'd always been so driven, like many of us are, driven to, you know, be the best dentist I could be, have, you know, a really resounding practice, you know, to make, you know, sure my family was financially secure, you know, all those things that I think we all believe in. And I started, we're really rapidly changing my perception and my priorities during that time. You know, that was back in 2012. It was actually 2004 when she had the transplant. So I made a decision during that time after her surgery, Jesse, that I was no longer going to hold the keys to the practice. I was not going to be what I call chained to the practice. Now, I am not in all any way demeaning our wonderful profession. You know that. You know I deeply appreciate what dentistry did for me, what allowed me to do to serve patients. But I'm a believer today that life goes in phases. And some people want to stay with one thing and do that their whole life. And if that's their choice, do it. But have in your heart what you want to be and what you want to do and what serves your lifestyle, and not just you, but your family. And so I made that decision that, you know what, I was dentistry was serving me financially, but it wasn't serving what I needed to provide for my family. That was time, not money, time. And how could I get time if I was chained to the practice, meaning I had to be there to keep things going. Now I had an associate, and that's another story as to how that all worked out. But you know, to answer your question specifically, it was my daughter's health crisis that made me rethink my priorities and go to what I today call a plan B. Now, plan B, Jesse, I did have in place. I didn't call it plan B back at the time. Just a short brief, you know, when I was in dental school back in 1980, centuries ago, 1980. now I'm showing you my age, but I don't feel like I'm that old. I still feel like I'm really young. Just test my endurance somewhere, and I'll show you my stuff. But anyway, back in 1980, first year in dental school, I got my father to be my joint venture partner, if you will, on the first rental property that I owned. Really, the first rental property he ever owned, because I didn't drag him into it, but I kind of convinced him that this was a good thing to do. That real estate was a good thing to do to build wealth outside of one's primary career business practice. And even though I didn't have a practice, I was in school, I thought, well, why not start learning the ropes now and get my dad to be the financial partner? And so we did. We partnered up. I did the management, and he put up the money and the credit. And 3 years later, we split about $50,000 in profit on that property. Now, you could say, well, maybe beginner's luck. I don't think it was all been beginner's luck. We did a few things smart. Timing can be certainly a part of it. But long story short, I realized that in that 3.5 years of owning, quote, managing that property, that I personally made my half of the cut of the profit was at least as much, maybe more than I earned waiting tables at a restaurant, you know, nights and weekends during my years. I made more money in less time. I thought, there's something to this real estate that I always thought that it was, but now I knew that it made sense. And so I never stopped acquiring real estate. Even when I got out of practice, out into practice, out of school, I should say, I kind of ran the two tandem. And so that became my plan B. Well, that's what I call it today. When I needed to leave practice when Jenna was sick, I did have the financial resources to do it. So I'm not saying that's an easy thing. I'm not telling people just to, you know, just change your whole modicum of life overnight. You got to do some planning for it, for sure. So that's a long answer to your question.
No, that's a wonderful answer. And obviously there's been, I would imagine, some emotional highs and lows on that journey as well. I'm curious to understand, David, just before we get into what you do and continue, or what you did and continue to do, I should say, with your real estate. What I'm interested to explore just to start with is when that point came and you're sitting in the hospital and you're thinking, my goodness, my life has to change because I need more time to spend with my family. This is my priority. What did you do within your practice? How did you, you know, free yourself up from the practice? Do you still own the practice? Did you ultimately sell it? Or did you kind of make it the engine that drives the cash flow to invest in real estate? How did you position the practice in that context?
I sold the practice twice. How about that?
Okay.
Sold twice.
Oh,
yeah,
geez.
That's a new formula. it's called the boomerang sale, Jesse. The boomerang sale.
I love the Aussie reference.
I'm gonna write a book about it. How to sell your practice twice. The downside to that is I didn't get the sale price twice. I got it once. So you know, I've almost all of my practice career, I've had an associate, at least one associate. There's times when I had two. In my practice. Now, they were strictly associates. I never opened the door for a financial partnership. That was because, you know, like a lot of us, I still want to maintain that control. And that worked okay for me. Associates typically don't stay forever in that mode. You know, most of them, if they're any good and have any motivation, they're going to want to move on and have their own practice. So it was, you know, the kind of revolving door every 2 to 3 years, no new. So at the time, I did have an associate, and that was a blessing. I had a good associate. And when I was out of the practice with Jenna, you know, sometimes for a week, 10 days at a time, what I found was that everybody stepped up. Now, what I mean by that, see, is that, you know, we think our mindset is such, and I don't, it wasn't an ego trip for me. It's just, we think that, you know, if we're like the senior doctor, the one who started the practice, you know, that really only our patients, they will only see us. And same thing for like hygiene patients. Well, they got to see us. And if I'm not there, you know, patients aren't going to come in, even if I've got a good associate. Well, it's not true, but I thought the same thing. Yet in this case, I was pushed into having to deal with that. You know, well, guess what? We're going to test this theory right now, and hopefully it works. Hopefully I'm wrong. I'm wrong about the fact that I need to be there. And I was wrong. Because everybody stepped up. So the patient stepped up, meaning that instead of saying, well, we'll just wait till Dr. Phelps gets back. No, they decided, you know what? I'll go ahead and see the associate. I'll do that. The staff, again, will subconsciously sabotage your efforts if you want to change your schedule, if you want to cut back, if you're transitioning. Unless you really get your staff on board and they understand your why, they will sabotage your efforts, not on purpose, but because they're thinking, well, you know, Dr. Phelps or Dr. Green, you know, they really don't know what they're doing. I mean, they told me they want to have Wednesdays off, but you know what? I know that I better get them booked up because they're really not going to be happy. They'll think that. So in this case, the staff had no choice. And the associate, as I said, was a good associate. I know in retrospect that I held him back. Now, again, I didn't mean to. I didn't want to. I wasn't trying to use my seniority and only just throw him the bones of the practice. But I know that just my being there and not having those discussions with the staff or the patients and saying, this is where I want to go in my life and my practice, and we have a great associate here, and here's how we're going to build him or her up. Here's how we are going to put the state, you know, until you do that, if that's your goal, you're going to be just where I thought I was, and that is still being the driver of that practice and never elevating anybody else to actually take an active role in production. And that's what I wanted. That's what I needed. So that worked. Now, that was the associate that I ended up selling to, that I'm talking about, that I'm saying was a good doctor. Now, the doctor I had when Jenna was actually sick, another associate, also was a very good doctor, clinically very gifted, and was totally dedicated to dentistry. But I overlooked some character flaws. And I won't go into detail because it's not necessary. It's just, it didn't work out. And I did sell the practice. I carried back the paper. In other words, I sold it with seller financing, thinking that he would, within a year, refinance me out and all would be good. Well, that didn't happen. And I had to take the practice back. That was not good. That's why I had a boomerang sale. I sold it once, had to take it back. Not a good thing. But I had learned, the big thing I learned, Jesse, was I didn't have to be the doctor in that practice if I managed it and handled things the right way. So I didn't go back in after that failed sale. I bought 1, 2, 3 more associates in over a period of about 5 or 6 months. And I own the practice, you know, as a really remote owner. Yeah, I went in about half day once a week to be there administratively, but I did not do dentistry. And 3 years later, so that was 2007 after I got the practice back, 2010, let's call it three and a half years later, I sold the practice for all cash to the doctor who rose to the top. He ascended to the top of the three, and we had a happy ending. And he's doing very well today, by the way. He's now how many years down the road? Seven and a half years on that practice, and he's doing great. So it all worked out.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Jesse, it's, you know, everybody is going to go through challenges in life, things that come up in life that you don't expect, you can't forecast for, you can't plan for. It's just going to happen. You live long enough, health issues or sometimes just decisions we make that aren't the best decisions. It's going to throw you for a loop. And, you know, I hated that when that happened in my life. I mean, I thought life is not fair. Why me? Because I thought I was a good guy, good doctor, good father, all those things. I thought, why me? Why me? You know, I thought I did everything by the book. Doesn't matter, Jesse. Things will happen in life that's going to throw you off the horse, throw you off the saddle. And what you have to do is just say, you know what? That's the way life is. But when you take that and say, you know what, I'm going to push through this, whatever it is, and I will learn some things going through this. And if I persevere, when I come out on the other side, whether that's months or even, you know, in my case, sometimes it was several years later, better things are on the other end. I can tell you, not just for me, but for other people that I know well, same thing. But at the time, yeah, it's not pretty. it's frustrating. You can be angry at yourself. And, you know, there's a lot of emotion. As you said, there's a lot of emotion. But I would just tell people, if you're dealing with something like that in your life, or if you have, you understand what I'm saying. And if you haven't, you probably will. Just take my word that it will be better. Don't give up the ship.
I love that. That's fantastic. It's an absolute story of, you know, going through some tough times and coming out the other side all the better, stronger for it. And as you say, once you've walked through that door or crossed the Rubicon, so to speak, then, you know, really, as you say, there are, you know, better things awaiting you. When you were in that period of 2007 to 2010 and you were the remote owner, you were in there, you know, half a day a week, you know, for administrative purposes, I'm curious to understand, you know, what sort of things you needed to do to keep the practice operating profitably without, you know, resisting the temptation, I suppose, to get your fingers wet again and you know, dive into clinical dentistry, because I'm sure that it must have been tempting to kind of hop back in the saddle.
It's always tempting to go back to what you know and to be what I call, in the States, we have gas stations where you fill up with petrol, with fuel, right? And we have what are known as Shell stations. And there used to be a commercial about the Shell answer man. So the Shell answer man was the guy there who could answer any question about your car. Come on into the Shell station and they've got your back. They will help you diagnose any problem. And so I think a lot of the times in our practices or any business, any small business, you know, the owner becomes the Shell answer man, meaning everybody comes to him or her. Because we enable that. We create that environment by default. And so it's not, again, I don't think it's about ego. It's just we don't know better. We think, well, I am the owner. I am the doctor. I'm supposed to know. And therefore, I will be that answer person. But the problem is that does not empower anybody. Everybody is dependent upon you as the owner. And that's not building them up. That's not giving them the leash to start taking ownership of different parts of the practice or the business that could be done. I was dedicated to the cause, Jesse, because of my daughter. So that's one thing that kept me from going back in and saying, you know, I could go fix that. I could, oh, you know, the associate, he's probably going over his head on this one. Let me go take care. Well, you know what? That doesn't serve anybody. And so I had that reason why not to go back and do it. And I think that was the biggest one. I think what people have got to think about is when you make a commitment to making a change in your life or your practice, whatever it is, that you are really going to make a considerable change. You know, what you and I would call a transformative change, not just some minor change. You've got to commit to it. You've got to draw a line in the sand and say, I'm going to hold to this. Now, it's not going to be fun. I'm going to be tempted. But you've got to hold your ground, because if you don't, you're going to slip right back into whatever it was that you were trying to get out of, like the quicksand, and get sucked right back into it again.
I love the fact that it's that decision, it's that, you know, no return. I guess it's the old analogy of burn the boats and we're not going back there. I think that's really sound and solid advice. What I wanted to just explore with you, because you and I, as I said in the beginning, we both work with dentists, and I'm curious because there is a saying that we have, and you may have heard it, I'm not sure, but when America sneezes, Australia catches a cold. Meaning that, you know, typically things happen and change in the States, and then over a period of time, we see those changes a little further down the track. So I'm curious to just understand, what trends are you seeing happening in private practice at the moment, whether it's, you know, increasing influence of corporations, whether it's, you know, the health insurance companies, competition, whatever. What do you see as the biggest trends impacting the profession in America at the moment that you think will probably translate across the water to us?
Sure, Jesse. Great, great question. Well, I think you named the primary drivers of that change, and that is, you know, the corporate model, which is becoming very, very entrenched and gaining lots of ground in the States. That model actually rolled out, gosh, well over a decade, probably 2 decades ago, for a little while, and never gained any traction. But now it has, and that's not going to ever change. They're gonna be, the corporate model will forever be, you know, and become probably even a much more significant part of healthcare, certainly in dentistry, already has in medicine. So we kind of watch medicine and see the way it's gone, and they've gone before us, you know, in dentistry and some of the other professional practice arena. And then, yes, healthcare overall, you know, we've had some massive changes in our healthcare model here that started back in 2010 with what's called the Affordable Healthcare Act. Now, that doesn't have its roots. Dentistry does not have its roots in that. That's more for medical care. But the model and kind of the power that it's given to the insurance companies is definitely being seen in dentistry, and that is being directive of the reimbursements that dentists are paid based on fee schedules has been greatly diminished. So the insurance companies are also having a throttling effect on practices. And what I think that really means for us as a profession is that in many, many cases, I think over the next 5, 10 years, the next decade, the solo practitioner that we used to know and used to really be the bedrock of our industry is going to be not as well equipped to maintain. Now, that doesn't mean if somebody is in, you know, their last 5 or even 10 years of practice that they can't keep their model and probably be okay. Depends on where they are, of course, geographically and that sort of thing. But I think for younger docs, mid-career or younger, yeah, they need to be looking at different models. And that's going to be more of smaller or larger, you know, group practices. Something that I think we weren't really built to think about when we were going through school, because it was all about, you know, we wanted to like kind of control our own destiny and kind of be the boss, if you will, you know, that concept. And that model's changed. So we have to adjust our thinking to stay relevant and, you know, to stay profitable in our need to provide security and, you know, pay off school debt and the capitalization of a practice, which is obviously very high in dentistry. So yeah, those are the things that are definitely having a great effect over here.
So if you were a dentist who was, let's say, 35 years old, been out of university, let's say, give or take 10 years or thereabouts, kind of just coming into your prime or already in your prime, what sort of advice would you be giving, you know, someone at that kind of early, the first half of their career, shall we say, what sort of advice would you be offering them if they were thinking they wanted to, you know, transition to practice ownership if they hadn't already? What sort of things should they be considering? Should they do it at all? Or should they really focus on creating the plan B and making that ultimately become the plan A?
It's totally going to depend on the person, Jesse. There's no cookie cutter. I would not give, you know, broad advice like that, because I think what every dentist needs to determine for him or herself is what is your DNA? In other words, you know, what drives you as far as what you want out of life and for your family? What's the most important thing to you? If you're an A-type person and you just really want to, you know, have that control, then, you know, you can do that. But, you know, you're going to need to be more in the business aspect of dentistry. You need to start really thinking about dentistry as a business, in addition to being a profession where you have your expertise. There are other dentists in that younger stage of life where family life is, you know, they said, that's everything to me. You know, I want quality time. I'm not about the big lifestyle. And so in that case, that person, that dentist, should probably find a good place where they can work underneath, you know, a good umbrella, good, you know, model. It could be corporate. It could be, you know, a group practice. It could even be in a partnership where there's other dentists to share the load. But that way, you know, the brunt of all of the management of a small business doesn't fall on that person. And now they can have the quality of life. In that case, that person, that dentist, you know, probably does need to focus a little more on a plan B. But, you know, they're going to have a little more time to do so. And so that's the advice I'd give. You've got to determine who you are. Don't follow a path because everybody says go that direction. You can do what you want to do, but you have to have clarity about it. You can't be wishy-washy. You just know what you want and surround yourself with other wise people. Get good counsel from others that have gone down the road one way or the other, and find out, you know, from them what have they found, you know, about what direction they've gone. And there's just an immense amount of great information and advice and mentorship out there if you'll just seek it.
Yeah, look, I really love the fact that you don't take a cookie cutter approach to life, and nor do I. And in fact, one of my mentors, who ironically is a Texan, by the way,
who's that?
A guy called Keith Cunningham. And he lives in Austin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know Keith, yeah?
Absolutely.
He has this saying that all of his bad ideas started out as good ideas. And
right.
And I really love that expression. And it's interesting, you know, because anytime I've ever come unstuck, or particularly come unstuck, yeah, my bad idea started off as a good idea. And it's usually because I've followed what I thought was the prescribed path. This is just what you do. And I don't think I allowed critical thought for my own situation, took into account, you know, my own DNA, as you say, and just kind of did what everyone did as dentists. And so I really love the fact that the challenge is to really think carefully about who you are, where you want to go, what it is you want to achieve, and I guess know thyself so that you can make those decisions which are in the best, you know, best alignment for your own strengths and where you want to go. So I think that's just fantastic. Before we kind of get into a little bit about the Freedom Blueprint, because I'm really curious to unpack that a little bit, just one last question about practice. What do you see? I mean, we hear lots of people giving good advice, but do you see any just particularly poor advice being peddled or dogma that, you know, you think, well, you know, that's really doesn't hold true in today's world, or it's not applicable anymore, or it's just downright, you know, dangerous advice? Do you hear any of pieces of advice kind of being peddled around in whatever business environment you may be in, you kind of go, no, that just doesn't land for me?
Well, I think, you know, generically, so it could be in dentistry or really any business, but, you know, there's a lot of people or advisors that talk about, you know, top line revenue. So it's kind of almost like bragging rights when you might go to a meeting or a group or a workshop, and you know, it's like, you know, do you have a seven figure practice or whatever, you know? And it's like, really? I mean, that's to me, I'll just say, you know, over here we'd say that's very lame.
Yeah.
That's very lame, you know, because top line revenue is nothing. It's what you keep. And that can be done very, very well, you know, in a smaller practice, you know, in the right location where you can set that kind of thing up. So yeah, where people, their benchmark, you know, as far as quote success is based on top line revenue. Yeah, bad model. And I feel badly when I hear that advice, and I see younger docs, you know, thinking, gosh, you know, something's wrong with me because I don't have this, you know, multi-million-dollar practice thing going on. I'm thinking, don't go there. I mean, don't push that unless you're that type A driver and you want to have multiple practices and do all that. Now, if that's who you are, great. But for the majority, that's definitely not where it's at. You can have a great practice and focus on what you keep and not some Taj Mahal practice because someone told you need to have it look that way and buy all this technology that probably becomes obsolete too quickly. Got to be very discerning about how you build out that practice, I truly believe.
I love that. And again, yeah, keeping your powder dry is something that I think is good advice for anyone. Yeah, keeping that cash under control is always good. It's an interesting story. I remember meeting a guy some years ago, and he had a huge practice, and he must have employed half of Sydney at the time. And I remember having a conversation with him. This is when I had my little two-surgery practice, just doing its thing. And his net profit his net cash flow position at the end of the year was about $50,000 more than me. And I remember thinking that must have been the hardest 50 grand he'd have to earn. I thought, mate, you can have that 50 grand and then some. I don't want those hassles. So I think it's really good advice there. David, I'm curious to explore the concept of the Freedom Blueprint. And I know you've got a lot of expertise in terms of investing, creating revenue streams beyond the dental practice. I'm wondering, could you just give us a bit of an overview of, you know, in broad terms, what that kind of looks like?
Sure. Well, Jesse, you know, I never hold out a carrot and say, hey, over here, you know, if you're stressed out with your practice and you're not really profitable, run over here and I'm going to show you how to make millions in real estate, because that's not what I do. So I always say, especially when I'm talking to, you know, our colleagues, is your practice, whatever model you're in, your practice is the engine that drives everything. And in fact, your best return on dollars invested and your time, if done optimally, is going to come from your business. Everything else in investment, when you have discretionary income outside of your practice, once you've invested to the level that you feel like the practice is running and there's really no more that you need to be investing in currently, you've got additional income revenues to invest. Okay, now is a great time to be investing in other asset classes where you can be building what I call the passive cash flow. And yes, for me, I'm very biased towards real estate because I know it works if you do it the right way, because I've done it long enough and I've gone through the cycles. So yes, the Freedom Blueprint is your plan A is your practice. Focus there first. Don't take your eye off the ball. And then real estate. So yeah, there's a right time, right place for everybody. And when we have younger doctors who come to us, to our Freedom Founders Mastermind, I very quickly let them know that we want you a part of this mastermind. However, we want you to learn about what say real estate investing looks like, but I don't encourage you to jump into it until we know that you've done what you need to for your practice, and maybe a combination of also paying off debt, the right debt to pay off the right time. You know, there's a sequence there too that we talk about in our blueprint. So we have to balance these things out. And so there's no cookie cutter. There's a customized individual blueprint for each and every member, each and every doctor, based on where they are and what their goals are. You know, we know what their goals are, what their lifestyle looks like. They have to define that. What does freedom look like to them? So we get these definitions out and we encourage spouses like crazy, you know, to come and be a part of the conversation, because you know, the doctor can't go back by themselves, him or herself, to their spouse and communicate this. I said, you've got to be on the same page. So you guys get this worked out. You determine what's important to you and your family, your lifestyle, and then we'll reverse engineer. And we'll that's how we figure it out.
Yeah, look, that's fantastic. And I guess, you know, having the spouse involved is going to be critical, of course, because, you know, it is obviously a team journey. Again, when it comes to, you know, creating wealth outside the practice, you know, the practice, of course, is the engine. It's what throws off the surplus cash flow once you've got your debt and other things covered off and all the rest of it. Where do you see, you know, I guess, you know, for someone, say, you know, I'm 45 years old, I'm, you know, kind of mid-career, and there'll be a lot of people listening to this show who are a similar age bracket to me. You know, when it comes to planning for the future and thinking, okay, how do I create some net worth for myself? How do I plan for my ultimate retirement? I'm happy doing dentistry for the time being. You know, I don't necessarily want to exit my practice anytime immediately, but you know, at the same time, I'm keeping one eye on the future. Where do you see the common mistakes being made in that regard? Where do people come unstuck?
Yeah, the big mistake, I think, Jesse, is, you know, even in a growing practice that someone is building up at mid-career, and they've got good revenues, good income, good enough profits, and the practice is growing. Maybe they're adding some additional doctors, and so likely the value of the practice is also going up. That's great. That's great. So you're building value in the practice. Your income is good, and so far so good. Right now, 15 years later, give or take, that doctor's ready to start retiring out, and maybe he sells off some fractional interest in the practice, sells the whole thing, whatever, and, you know, has a decent nest egg. You know, it's maybe, you know, $1.5 million, $2 million, whatever it might be. And now it's the scary time, because now that doctor is in charge of the nest egg, the investment capital, and he or she now has to figure out, how do I make this investment capital work for me? So all my life, I've been doing the work and I've been good at it. And I did a good job in my practice. But now this is what I've got. I sold, I pay taxes, and this is what I've got. And now I got to make this last for, heck, probably another 20, 25, maybe 30 years. How am I going to make that happen when I never got any instruction? I never had any practice doing that all my years. I used other models. And again, I'm not demeaning other models, you know, work them in tandem. But the problem is, in our traditional financial models, which, you know, is really in what I call paper, that would be stocks and bonds and mutual funds and annuities. The problem there is you're giving your money to somebody else or some other company or fund to do the work for you. And that's fine as long as that works. But what about when there's major cycles and now you may lose some of that, your capital, and that's not a good thing when you're retired. So the reason I like real estate, to get back to your question, is that you can actually learn how to create sustainable, predictable, you know, lifetime revenue streams from acquiring or investing in specific in real estate investment assets. And we won't go into the details of that because that's not the point here. But my point is, you have a responsibility to yourself and your family not to know everything there is about finances, because it's hard to do. But you need to be able to comfortably determine how you're going to orchestrate cash flow once you're no longer working. And that's what keeps a lot of dentists, a lot of our colleagues, stuck in that place where they probably could. I see doctors all the time, Jesse, that I tell them, you're closer than you think. You just don't know and have the confidence to do what you need to know. Let me show you how to gain that confidence. And that's what happens in Freedom Founders with our doctors who have been with us, who are in their late 50s or 60s and have been right there on the verge of wanting to sell and being done, but they couldn't pull the trigger because they didn't have the confidence. Give them 6 months, a year, 18 months, and now they got confidence and boom, practice is sold and they're loving it.
Fantastic. So they've got their revenue stream, they've got their time, and they're happy to, you know, sail off into retirement and feel comfortable and confident there's going to be a happy ever after kind of story.
That's what we all want, right?
Absolutely. Sail off into the sunset. Yeah. Hey, listen, mate, just really quickly as we wrap up, firstly, let me say thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's you know, late at night in Texas at the moment, and I really appreciate that. If you were going to give the audience just a couple of headline, you know, pieces of advice or lessons learned, or, you know, wisdom gained over the years from your journey, you know, if that was to be on a billboard, so to speak, what would be, you know, those things that you would, you know, say, these are the things I've learned or based on my journey so far, A, B, and C would be some good things to think about.
Great, great. I would say the first one would be, there's no such day in the week called someday. A lot of people, including myself, would think that, you know, I will, as soon as I get everything right, as soon as I get, you know, some financial things set, my practice is doing a little better, they pay off some debts, whatever that might be. When I get things just right, then someday when that happens, then I'll start, you know, living my life for significance and spending more time with my family or the stuff I know really is important. But right now I just need to focus on these things. And someday when I get those things right, I will then move on. And problem is, someday will never happen. So forget that. You've got to be balancing these things as you go along. It's easy to say. I grant you, it was hard for me as well. So that's probably the biggest one. I would say the other one, Jesse, would be that you should not look at your business or your practice as something, an entity that you serve. Your practice, your business should serve you. And again, you would say, well, easy to say, David. Yes, I agree. But you know what? I figured out how to do it. Now, it took me 20 some years and a kick in the pants to see that it could be done, but it can be done. It can be done. So that you just got to have that focus. You've got to think, other than to serve people, I get all that, right? But other than that, why did I go into a profession, a career where, you know, I could like have the controls? Why did I do that? Well, to have those controls meant I was hopefully setting up so I could have that practice, that business serve my lifestyle. And unfortunately, for most, it's the other way around. You serve the practice, and that's not the way it was meant to be.
Again, fantastic advice, Matt. I really, really appreciate those two key pieces of wisdom. You know, someday never comes, and have the practice serve you rather than you serve it. Again, I would really echo those pieces of advice. David, thanks so much for taking the time today. There's loads and loads of gems you've just scattered through this whole conversation. And so for anyone listening, I really hope you've taken some great notes, because what David has shared in our conversation today over the last half hour or so has just been solid gold. And I'd really encourage everyone to kind of take those notes and, you know, implement them, because implementation is everything, and put them into a practice first thing tomorrow. So, David, from all of us here at Savvy Dentist, really appreciate your time. Thanks again.
Truly a pleasure, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.